in our discussion groups, we're going to slow down. And we're going to invite the children to join in with us. Because this is what we've been saying. The first principle to life change is that God has something to say today to us. And we need to slow down to hear that. Yes? So I'm going to lead us through an exercise with the kids. Kids can join in. This is a great exercise for the kids. This is not difficult. I'm going to lead from the front, but I want you to sit in groups. All right? So it's going to take 10 minutes. Then we're going to break for coffee. Then we're going to sing together, actually. And then we're going to break to coffee, all right? So we'll actually do the thing. So look, just very, very quickly. Groups, 4 or 5. Don't make them too big. Because there's a task that we need to do that we won't get around. But as quick as you can, break out groups into 5. I'm going to give you 30 seconds to introduce yourselves to each other if you don't know each other. And really recommend, if you were in a group last week, switch out the group this week. Go somewhere, sit somewhere else. Involve people. Break your families apart. You won't hear me saying that very often. Yeah, go join a group. 30 seconds, the clock is ticking. Is that done? All right, good. So here's the first thing I'd like you to do. In groups, I'd like you to read together Revelation 19, verses 1 to 16. All right? So, and the way I want you to do that is just read it in a round, okay? So just read it once, read it in a round, give yourself a couple of verses each, get the kids involved, get them reading. Maybe you'll read a line and they'll read the line back to you. So it's Revelation 19, verses 1 to 16. And I'll give you a few minutes to read that together out loud. So how are we doing? Okay, so guys, have a look at, just very quickly, have a look at verse 12. And this is our focus for this time. His eyes are like a flame of fire, on his head are many diadems, and he has a name written no one knows but himself. So there are 6 very specific things that the text explicitly says about Jesus. See if you can find them, all right? So 6 things that the text explicitly says, very specifically, about Jesus. Don't go outside the text. Don't interpret the text. Just list 6 things. And I'll go through them in verse 12. Just in verse 12, yep. Wow. So, all right. So it's almost like countdown. How many did you get? 6? 8? All right. So your attention then. So let's go very quickly. I got 6. This group got 7. So we're here. They're 7 for a minute. All right. So look, you know when we were doing that triangulation and we said These are the things that are true about God. We weren't interpreting those things. We were just, this is what's true about God. Okay, so what's true about Jesus in this verse? Number one, he has eyes. Yeah, you got that? Yeah, good. Number two, his eyes are like a flame of fire. And look, judgment is an interpretation. Okay? So we're not writing about judgment. We're just saying his eyes are like a flame of fire. The text doesn't say that is any reference to judgment at this point. All right? So his eyes are like a flame of fire. Number three, he has a head. So did anyone miss that one? That's an important one. Number four, on his head are many crowns. Yeah? Number five, he has a name. And number six, only he knows his name. And your seventh was? No one else knows his name is about me, not God. Maybe. All right, so look. Out of those six things, how many of them are about us? Great. So we're not in this verse, is that right? Okay. So again, if we were to triangulate, and you may want to just jot this down very quickly. If you were to triangulate this verse, we looked at this several weeks ago. In the top left-hand corner of that triangle, I'd be writing probably four things. I would probably leave out the fact that he has eyes and a head, because they are somewhat implicit in the text, aren't they? All right? So think about this as we go through this. Reading the Bible is a lot like, and I know you don't do this. I don't do this just for your comfort. Reading the Bible is a lot like reading someone else's mail, a lot like reading someone else's post. Okay? In fact, there is only one verse in the Bible that is written specifically for you. Okay? So out of the 31,000 verses that are in the Bible, one of them is written for us. All of the others are written for other people. Now, I know what you're going to say. What's that verse? Right? No? All right, let's carry on. So that verse is Romans 15, verse 4. Whatever was written in former days was written for our instruction, that through endurance and through encouragement of the scriptures, we might have hope. Okay? And if you want to do it like a time-space shimmy, that's what you have to do to understand that verse. So what that means is that the Bible is not about you. Okay? It's not about you. Very easy for us to read something and go, there's me. I'm in that verse. Well, unless you're reading Romans 15, verse 4, you're not in that verse. That verse is not even addressed to you. Okay? So that's a humbling thing to start with, because even the stuff that is written about you is written to someone else about you. Right? And none of us like that. So in the same way, and this is where I want to get to, singing, hopefully you should have had a sheet with a hymn on. Crowning with many crowns, right? So some of you are like, have already noticed. Oh, Revelation, yeah, 19, verse 12. Many diadems, crowning with many crowns. Ah, see where he's going. So look, in the same way as the Bible, songs, many of the songs that we sing are not written about you either. They are someone else's post. I mean, it's literally like, you know, it's landed on your doorstep and you've opened it. It's not addressed to you. It's not about you. And yet we're reading it. And so I thought we would read this hymn. Now, let me just say that this hymn isn't scripture. Never want to put those two things on the same level. All right. So I know, you know, we go verse by verse through the Bible and we're Bible people and all that. But look, and I'm not suggesting that the Bible and the Bible and scripture, hymns and scripture are the same. But this is almost like a, what did we call it the other day? Engineering. Thank you. Reverse engineering. This is the outcome of faith. This is a faith response, this hymn. So here's what I want to do. We've literally got 10 minutes left after the 10 minutes we've just had. This is good stuff though, right? This is good. This is stuff we need. Read this hymn, okay? And in your group, but read it aloud as you go around, and let's do it all. Let's do the first four verses, And thanks, Jeff. But here's what I want to do. If you've got, I want you to read it four times. All right? But if you've got odd number of people in your group, everybody's like, yeah, I have. If you've got odd number of people in your group, I want you to read even amount of lines. If you've got even amount of people in your group, read it odd number of times. Here's why. If you do that and you do it four times, it means that everybody reads a different portion of the hymn. Because if you do what I do, when it's someone else's turn, I'm quickly counting round. When it's my turn, I'm reading my part so I don't mess up. Okay? Or I'm switching off and I'm just thinking about the bit I've got to read because the press is on. So if you've got, you know, eight people in your group, read three lines and then go back to the beginning and you should be able to read the whole thing. Is this group done? You done? All right, most of you are done. So the reason I'm asking you to do this is it's a lot like reading the Bible. When you think about a quarter of the Bible is poetry, set out in that literary form of a poetic form. Poetry has specific qualities like rhythms and patterns and images. Good, because we're going to talk about that in a minute. Look, poems, if you know anything about poetry, poems don't do well skim read, do they? So if we can learn how to access a hymn, we're also learning how to access a quarter of the Bible. And also we've been encouraged by Michael Bridges, who wrote the piece, about his response. How is he preaching to his own soul? And so you'll notice that we never get this amount of time to actually sing it, do we? When we're singing it. You know, it's fast-paced. You know, we finish one line, we're on to the next. Finish that line, we take a breath for, you know, the verse, and then we're on to the next line. And a lot of times we're going through the motions, aren't we? You know, this is a great hymn, let's sing it. And then we sing it, and then it's over, and it's like, what on earth does potentate mean? And how long, listen, this is a well-known hymn. How often have we sung this and we don't know what potentate means? Effortable. What on earth? Right? So, these words come fast and a lot of the time we glaze over them. We don't have time to stop and consider what it's actually saying. And one of my hopes as we look at this hymn now is that you'll never see this hymn in the same way and it will mean something different to you. Perhaps for the rest of your life. As you realize again, hail, Redeemer, hail, for thou hast died for me. So this hymn is rich. It's born out of someone else's application of Revelation 19. There's someone else's faith here, faith response. Someone else who allowed the word of Christ to dwell in them richly. You get this sense because it's just crammed full of experience. And remember what we said earlier. Singing gets you from professed belief to functional belief. Right? And so singing does that by engaging our feelings, our experiences. The imagery is supposed to capture you. Right? And stop you. And force you almost into rejoicing. And again, as we read, we're singing someone else's post. It's a song, whether it's a song or whether it's biblical poetry. It's someone else's mail. So look, let's pull this hymn apart and let's talk about it really quickly. We'll probably do the first two verses and I'll leave you to do that, the rest for homework. Here's a quick key for you. You can write down as we go. If you've got highlighters, you can highlight these in different colors. If you haven't got highlighters, I'll give you a different key, all right? So when we said about God and his promises, you can highlight that blue or you can put a cross. Cross as in Calvary, right? Rather than as in wrong, okay? So we'll talk about that. So the key is cross, God and his promises, or blue. An arrow is faith working through love, okay? Or the, you know, that's the response. Or you can highlight that green. Green means go, okay? N, things about our struggle, our necessities, or the things that we need Christ's mercies for, our troubles, and orange. So this is the same as the triangulation, same set out the same way. So across, God and his promises, or blue. Arrow or green is faith working through love, the response of faith. N or orange is things about our struggle or that necessitate, that's the N, necessitate God's mercies. And then O, things about you, your struggles or your sin, O or red. So we'll just go through this real quick. Notice the first thing, and you can just mark this up, annotate your hymn as we go. Notice the first thing, that the hymn isn't about you. The first thing that I see in this psalm is that it tells you to do something. It tells you to stop and consider. And that's often the first place we stumble, isn't it? Letting the word of Christ dwell in us. We like takeaway Bible verses. We like drive-through Bible verses. And so here, it's to tell us. It's telling us stop and think. There is a call for you to awaken to who he is, to stop and think. Awake my soul. And so you might want to put that in green or an arrow. Awake my soul. That is the response of faith. The response of the faithless person is also normally a busy life with few stops. And so awake my soul. And what he's saying is, look, pay attention. Think about what you're reading. Get rid of all the distractions life throws at you. And so we're told to awaken to something. What is that? Well, it's to crown him with many crowns. And how does, and you can highlight that in green or put an arrow, because that's a faith response. Crown him with many crowns. How does crowning with many crowns becomes conscious? How do we do that? Well, by stopping and thinking about and granting to him who he actually is. This is what we've been talking about this morning. It's actually a call to awaken to do something, which is to recognize him. You may say this is the first crown of the many crowns. Recognize him, who he is. Well, who is he? Well, he is the Lamb upon his throne. That's blue, right? That's a cross right there. That is something about God. He is a Lamb on a throne. And then we're confronted with another idea straight away, and it's preceded with this word hark. And you might immediately think, well, hang on a second. It's not Christmas. Who's harking? And there's no angels in view. Well, look, hark just means listen. So awake, listen. And the difficulty is that if we rush past it, guess what? We haven't hearkened, have we? The word is inviting you to do something. Again, it's inviting you to stop, to slow down, and to listen. And so we're being invited in. To stop and listen to something. Well, what is it that we're being asked to listen for? Well, to listen, and this is just beautiful, to listen to how the heavenly anthem drowns out all the music but its own. Right? And look, you know, in our culture, there's a lot of music playing, isn't there? There's a lot of noise. There's a lot of competition, metaphorical and literal. And here we're being called to listen to something that is louder than all the distractions that is there, if we will but just hark. Awake my soul and sing of, well, what am I to awake to? What am I to sing of? Him who died for thee. So, blue, him who died. Something about God, thee. He died for you. There's a necessity there. That's the orange. That's, you know, that's the end, the need. He died for thee. There was a need there. And hail him. Faith response. Hail him. Thy matchless king throughout all eternity. That's something about God. And look, we've been given a second crown, you might say. We're invited to crown him as the matchless king. And we're invited again just to stop, to hark, to listen, to do that. And then crown him the Lord of love. Second verse. And you know, look, how it is, we just breeze right through, and I am conscious of the time this morning, but look, if I was to rush this thing, the whole thing would become pointless, because we're saying, stop and think, stop and listen, slow down. And you know, we get to the second verse, we're like, oh, I know this tune. Let's crown him the Lord of love, and we go, and we breeze right through, because look, it starts with a repetition, and we're like, oh, repetition, I know this. But look, in our minds, repetition means redundancy. It's poetic license. Fill the space, but it's not. It's another invitation to stop and consider who it is we are crowning. Well, who are we crowning? Well, we're crowning the Lord of Love. Blue. And just as Hark says, listen, the next word, behold, means look. Look at it. Behold in your mind. Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly. Look at what? Well, look at the definition of love itself in blue or cross. His hands, his side, rich wounds, yet visible above in beauty glorified. There's something unbearably beautiful about this love if we would actually see it. If we would actually slow down and notice it. It is a sight, Michael Bridges says, it is a sight, a mystery so bright. And then the fourth invitation, let's just carry on. Fourth invitation, crown him the Lord of Peace. You know I was going to do that. And it gives us this picture of what God's peace does. It gives us a picture of what peace from pole to pole means. And it's a picture of human beings who have stopped fighting with each other. It says that wars, and so wars is orange. That's an end. That's a need. We have a need for wars to cease. And the cease is actually in green, or it's the arrow, because that's a faith response. Absorbed in praise and power. Absorbed in praise, in prayer and praise. Aware of my need for mercy at all times, I am fully aware of who God is and that he is worthy of honor, and I have gratitude for all that he does. These are the two things that answer our need, are they not? Prayer and praise. 1 Thessalonians 5, we read it earlier. Rejoice always, pray without ceasing. Rejoice is knowing God, who he is and what he has done, and gratitude for it. And prayer is without ceasing. Prayer is putting belief into practice, recognizing that you need help in your current struggle in life. And even if your life falls apart, the hymn writer says, his reign shall know no end in blue. With a cross. His reign will know no end. Even when the world is falling apart, faith trusts. Even when things are looking like they are at their worst. The cross, around the cross, beautiful picture, sweet fragrance can be found. I mean, that's just worth meditating on, isn't it? It's a life that knows what's really going on and does not degrade God because of life circumstances. And then finally, the fifth invitation to crown him the Lord of years, the potentate of time. Again, there's this word that forces us to stop and think, and I'm glad that it's made you stop and think earlier. Potentate is linked to power. He is the creator and sustainer of time. God lives in eternity. He created time, and he created day and night and seasons. He is the ruler of time. He is the creator of the rolling spheres there in blue. Cross it. Not only is he the ruler of time, but everything that is in it. He is ineffably sublime. Well, that's a difficult word. But when you stop and think and consider, what it means is that he is indescribable. He is beyond comprehension. He inspires awe that puts you on your face, and even angels cannot look directly at the Lord's glory. And then look, this hymn moves. This is the only place it moves. He's been talking to himself all of this time for the first few verses. And now Matthew Bridges now moves and speaks to God. So he's been talking to himself. Now he speaks to God. And he says, all hail, green, arrow. That's a faith response. All hail, redeemer, blue, cross. Hail, faith response. For thou hast died for me. Thou hast died, blue, cross. For me, orange, need. Green, or faith response, arrow. Thy praise shall never, never fail throughout eternity. Now, have you seen what Matthew Bridges has done? Was super interesting and a lesson to all of us about singing when we don't feel like singing. The center of what the writer intended to do at the beginning of the hymn, what he has exhorted himself to do, is what he does do in the last two lines. His soul is awake. He begins, awake my soul and sing of him who died for thee and hail him as a matchless king throughout all eternity. Soul, you must do this. And so he gets to the end of the hymn This becomes all hail, Redeemer, hail, for thou hast died for me. Thy praise shall never, never fail throughout eternity. So let's join our hearts and sing this song together. Let's turn our chairs round. Let's get our kids involved. We now know this hymn. We now know what this hymn is saying. Stand.